Oh, that's right. Gosh, what time is it? Tick tock, tick tock. It's a little after 8:15. We're supposed to have a guest coming back here in just a few minutes. We, last night, I tell you what, we're staying at the Phoenix Park Hotel and just had a great time at all the monuments. But by the time Emerald made me walk everywhere that she made me walk, from the Lincoln Memorial to the Vietnam, we checked out the Vietnam Wall, to all the things that we ended up doing, ended up at the World War II monument there. It's such a beautiful monument. It's too bad, though, the water was not, the fountains and everything weren't working in it, but still very, very, very moving. And I just want to say this, that we were so exhausted. We came back, we flopped down on the bed, we took a little break, and then we went and ate. And we didn't walk very far, because we went to the Dubliner, which is great. It has Irish food. Even the waiters and waitresses have an Irish feel to them, don't they, Emerald? Yeah, they do. So we did that last night, and Emerald was looking forward to her shepherd's pie. She had that last year. How good was it, Emerald? Scrumptious last night. So she had the shepherd's pie, and then I had one of the specials. So eat your heart out, Jeff. Here's what it was. Tilapia, broiled tilapia, and then it had a blue crab sauce on top of it, on top of balsamic rice with a side of vegetables and a few grapes. Yum! It was just great. So we had an excellent night. And then what did we have for dessert? Irish chocolate Bailey's cake. It was to die for. It was to die for. We did split a piece, just so you will know that we weren't going all out. Tonight, who knows? We may need two slices. But anyways, we had a great time doing that last night. And pretty much, then we just pooped out. I do want to talk about, you know, we are here to talk about immigration. And one of the things about immigration, of course, is the wall, and that's going to be a big part of it. We're also going to be talking about sanctuary cities. We're also going to be talking about H-1B-1 visas. We're going to be talking about... Well, I'm not going to share that yet. I hope our guest is on his way. He's supposed to be here 8:15. Isn't it past 8:15? Yep. Where is he at? I don't know. But if he shows up too late, Michelle Malkin will already be here. She is buzzing around here. Did you happen to see her on Fox News this morning? I was pretty shocked to have the TV on and see her on Fox News this morning. We even posted a picture on WCRS.AM radio. So, I don't know. It's just exciting to be here. And we're working. And our sound guys are coming back here just double-checking, making sure. He told me one time, he goes, Ann, don't put those headsets on your ears. I don't want to blow you away. I took them off. They were having a little problem, but I will tell you this. The people that do this, the FAIR group that does this, the audio, Silver Lake, the people that do this, boy, do they work hard, and they work well under pressure because they knew we needed to be on, and boom, bam, they had us on. So I am just thrilled that we are so fortunate here today. But on immigration, it is a hot topic. It does affect our jobs. It does affect where we're headed with jobs, the economy. It is a driver of a lot of different aspects of our whole economy. So if we can get a hold of the immigration, is the wall a necessity? Donald Trump said he was going to build it. So if he's building it, is he going to get it done? Big conversations about the solar panels. Are the solar panels put on the wall going to be a good thing? I don't know, but I'm going to find out. I've got lots of great guests here that are all going to be talking basically about immigration. You know me, though. I got to ask them those other questions. So why don't you just stay right with us as we get ready for another big, big day. Oh, how is everything down there in Greenwood? I haven't even looked to see how the weather is. I hope it's good. At Sharp Facets Gallery, you know they're going to be opening at 10 o'clock this morning. And All alone is he. Jeff down there with a couple of our assistants helping him out down there. He is going to be making deals, deals, and deals. You know, y'all know me as the deal maker, but Jeff says, I'm going to do it this time, Ann. I'm going to have the big deals. He told me I couldn't look at the books when I came back because he's going to be making some extra special deals. So if you're looking for a deal, whether it's diamonds, gold, colored stones, antique and vintage jewelry, art, any glassware, any of the things, our move is almost done. So we're coming down to the last two, maybe 3 weeks, but you got to come see us at Sharp Facets Gallery. So the best time to come, this week. Some of the things that we haven't been selling, we are going to sell. We've got furniture pieces in the gallery that are not going to be able to move over there. So if you've been looking at some of our vintage Chinese oriental furniture, baskets, stuff like that, go in and say to Jeff, I'm here to make a deal, and he'll make a deal with you. So stop on by and see him. Of course, they're always buying, you know that, but the big news is we're going to be selling. So why don't you come see us right there at Sharp Facets Gallery. Hey, have a seat right there, and we're going to hear a quick break. Let's take a minute break, Andy, and we'll be right back.
Gold. Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
On the road again. We're right back here, live from Washington, D.C. at the Phoenix Park Hotel. Who do I have with me right here? Heck, folks, I'm not even going to try to say his name. His name is Art, and what's the rest of it?
Del Cueto.
And Art.
You had it earlier. You could have pulled it off.
Oh, but it sounds so much better when you say it.
Yeah, that's what everyone says. I've been saying it for a longer time. I think that's what it is.
Well, you just put a little accent. What's your background?
But I'm Hispanic. But my family's from different parts, and but they came here legally, and I think that's what's important. So when people ask me, what's your background, I'm an American.
You kind of stuttered, though, there, didn't you?
Yeah, it made me think. You caught me off guard.
Yeah, well, no, but, I mean, you know, and that's what's always been great about America.
Right.
Is the melting pot of people that we've had. The biggest problem we have now, though, is we do have so many people that are coming here that are not coming through the borders legally. Now, what is your job?
So I work down on the southern Arizona border. As a Border Patrol agent,
mm-hmm.
Obviously I'm a National Border Patrol Council spokesman. I am the vice president for National Border Patrol Council, and I'm the local president out in Tucson. But I work out in the field. I'm still out there working in the field, so I do council and union activities for the agents. But I'm still an active agent. I put on the uniform. I go out there. I patrol the border. I apprehend and I arrest individuals that come in illegally, and I apprehend drugs.
You're going to be there on Friday, right?
I'm going to be there on Friday. So I'm here in Washington for this, but I leave Thursday afternoon. I arrive in Tucson sometime around midnight, and then 6 a.m. I'll be back in the field catching bad guys.
Now, my question would be, I would presume that with all the things you do, you could move away from being a actual border patrol and step up to a more administrative job. Why do you still stay in the field?
Because, first of all, a lot of it has to do with the union aspect, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I moved up to an administrative position, I wouldn't have that coverage. I've seen way too many individuals that have gone through the management ranks,
mm-hmm.
and they lose that voice. And they don't make really that big of a difference. I think now we're in a unique position with the Trump administration in office that, I can see the morale has changed in the patrol from the previous 8 years. But there's still a lot of holdovers from the Obama administration that are involved in the agency.
Sure.
And I think everyone's noticing that the swamp's a lot harder to drain than they originally thought.
Do you have a swamp down there in Arizona?
Yeah, we do. You know, it may feel like it may look like a desert, but it's swampy down there sometimes too. Let me tell you, there's a lot of draining that needs to be done in different areas. You know, I mean, and nothing against some of these managers. I think we have managers that can do the job and could do a good job, but there's all those holdovers that, you know, they pushed the whole illegal aspect. And I won't say the illegal aspect. I'll say they pushed a lot of issues of turning the other way and not enforcing the immigration, because what President Trump is doing is nothing out of the ordinary. He's just saying these are the laws on the books that have been in there for a long time. We need to start enforcing them because we haven't enforced them. What's so hard to understand about that? There's laws.
I have no idea.
There's laws, and let's enforce the laws that are there.
Yeah.
Seems pretty simple to me.
It does seem pretty simple. So what is the problem in getting it done?
I think a lot of it may be mechanics. You know, so you program a child to do the same thing over and over again. I guess we tie our shoes without thinking of it. We just know how to tie our shoes. And I think there's a lot of individuals that are left over from the Obama administration that were doing things a certain way. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for them to understand, we're gonna enforce the laws now? How does that work? You know, we've been doing it this other way for so long.
Yes.
I think that's what it is. I think that's a big part of it.
Well, when you go out on Border Patrol, you are seeing illegals coming across the border.
Yes.
Is there a fence where you are at?
So there's different types of fencing throughout the entire border. Mm-hmm. I patrol near the Tohono O'odham Reservation, which is it's a Native American reservation, and it's right around 60 linear miles with the border, with the border to Mexico.
Right.
And it's very limited what we have. There's areas where you have barbed wire, you know, a couple strands. There's areas where you just have a metal beam. Mm-hmm. And that's what's unfortunate. We need a better barrier in those areas. That area alone that I patrol, with a lot of men and women out there that, you know, they're always out there. Record heat lately. You know, we're at 120, 125 degrees so far. What we've hit, and there's over 50% of all the drug seizures in the entire country are in that area.
Wow.
So how do we not need a better barrier in that area?
Exactly.
And that's what's it's been really, really hard to explain that to people.
Now, when the wall is built that Donald Trump is going to get done, will that be one of the first areas that they'll look at building the wall, or do you know?
We saw that the money was there, the budget, and I think they budgeted areas in Texas and areas in San Diego.
They didn't budget some for your area?
For the wall, I have not seen it within the budget yet. And like I said, I think there's a lot of other areas and logistics that they need to work out, because it is Native American land still. But I would, if I live there, you know, and I was part of the reservation, I would want a better barrier, because these individuals are running through my backyard. You know, you got hundreds of drugs coming through. I mean, it's just lawlessness. It's just amazing.
Now, where does the border agent stand? Because I remember talking to some ranchers and stuff, and our border agents were way back from where the border was, and they would actually let them come across the border, and before they would even start trying to bring them down.
Well, a lot of the issues that we have sometimes is some of the ranchers they're near the border, and it's I understand. I mean, it's their land, right? And it's difficult for agents to work that area, because you don't have just the it's not as accessible as you would think. So we just in those areas sometimes we're north of their land. We would gladly be on their land, right, and work there. But some of them they get a little upset. Some of them get upset.
Because I've talked to two or three of them from this show, and they're always like, why aren't they on the border? You know, be on the border.
Well, I mean, and I think a lot of the things is because we hear that all the time. Border Patrol agents, be on the border. Border Patrol, be on the border. But I always use a football term, and I don't know if you're a football fan. But
I'm from South Carolina, honey.
Well, there you go. So then I'm going to explain it to you, and you're going to understand. If I put all my defensive linemen on the line and that other team goes for a pass, what's going to happen? They're going to score a touchdown each and every time. So I think with the right amount of agents on the border, with technology on the border, with agents, you know, away from the border, you catch them coming through. There's a lot of moving parts. It's not just put everyone, you know, hand in hand across the border where there's no fence and sing kumbaya. There's a lot of things that go with it. And, you know, obviously, we don't have the agents and the manpower to just put them all on the line.
Right.
What gets through, we're going to have issues.
Now, what about drones? Are drones going to be able to make a big difference?
Drones will make a big difference, but it's like I've told people. In the end, you need boots on the ground to actually make the apprehension. A drone is not going to fly down and catch the illegals, right? Or catch the drugs coming into the country.
Come on, can't they go down and hover right in front of them and go, "You will not move. You
and
will
make
not
them stop."
Move.
Yeah. And make them stop. Yeah, that doesn't quite work. There's a lot of
We're
things that we need.
Some big drones over there in Syria and Iran and all
we
that
are,
kind
You
of
know
stuff,
what's funny is that I got friends that come back from overseas and they got better communications there too. I work on the reservation and we can't put towers so our radios can work good in areas because they won't allow us. Different laws. Oh, well, you can't put it in here, you can't put it there. So we have agents that it's hard for them to communicate on the res.
I've heard that.
And those are big issues. But this is what it comes down to. So you own a home and your home has walls, right?
Right.
But just the walls alone won't make it a home. You need the roof, you need the floor, you need the windows. That make it a home. And that's what it comes down to. We need to think of the United States as a home. And the walls are a very important structure to make it a home. But there's other things that we need. We need the roof, we need the windows, we need the doors, and we need security. And it all together, that's what makes it, a livable home. And that's the way I see America. So we need a wall. We need more agents. We need more technology. We need drones. We need enforcing our immigration laws against the individuals that break our laws. And I've said it time and time again. I have family from Mexico. I have a Hispanic background. But illegal is not a race. And that's what people need to understand.
Illegal is not a race. Well, now, that is very profound.
Well,
it's true. I'm being serious. It's very
no,
profound.
No, and that's the reality. And a lot of people, they I don't think they've been able to break that, the mold of thinking, you're anti-immigration. Well, no one's anti-immigration. We're not anti-immigration. Border Patrol agents are not anti-immigration. We're anti-illegal immigration. I'm not against you driving a car. I'm against you driving a car, drinking and driving.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reality. There's a legal way to do things, and there's an illegal way to do things. And your race does not define the legality of it. That's the truth.
No, we that are here in America should be called Americans.
That's it. Obviously, I have family in other countries, and I respect my family, and I love my background and my heritage. But the reality is, I fly one flag. And I believe in one country. And I know that sounds quirky at times.
I think it's a big problem for our country because we're getting away from that.
We are.
We used to be a country that believed in we are Americans, and we celebrated all the holidays. And you, as a Hispanic, could have your special traditions.
Traditions. That's the difference.
Yes. But you still believed in the policies and what we believed in this country. And that's the problem.
I have friends on Facebook, and, when federal holidays come up, sometimes they say, I'm flying my flag. I fly my American flag every single day outside my home. And I fly it every single day inside my heart. And that's all that matters.
That is true. So are you seeing changes in what's happening since President Trump has taken? Are there fewer? They keep saying there's fewer coming across the borders.
There was fewer coming across the borders, but what we've seen and what we've thought and we've said from the beginning is it's a honeymoon period because now recently we've seen those numbers spike. What we haven't seen a drop in is illegal drugs that are coming in. But like I said, the numbers of illegal aliens are spiking up again. And that's a concern.
Are they coming because they see the possibility of our country turning around, meaning more jobs, more opportunity?
I think a lot of it is from talking to some of the individuals that work for ICE, the Immigration Customs Enforcement, is we're noticing that some of these individuals, nothing's really changed with sending them back as soon as we thought they were going to be sent back.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I think we're very grateful for President Trump and voicing and talking and pushing agendas,
mm-hmm.
But the reality is there's a lot of holdovers still within the agency,
mm-hmm.
that are holdovers from the Obama administration, and I think they're programmed mechanically to continue doing what they were doing. So,
what do we need, a clean sweep down there?
I think we need a clean sweep.
Sometimes you're fired, maybe should be his mantra here and start over.
Yes. I'm going to be honest. I think we have individuals that are in leadership positions that were placed in those leadership positions from the Obama administration. And I think we've seen some of these individuals that did not have respect for President Trump when he was going through his campaign. Now that he's president, they're singing a different tune, but we need to hold them responsible for the tune they were singing before he became president. That's the honest-to-goodness truth. That's what I think needs to be done.
What is it? Actions speak louder than words?
Yes,
there you
definitely.
Go. There you go.
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, listen, I appreciate you coming on and spending some time. We'll have to have you on my radio
it
show.
It was amazing being on here. Thank you very much for bringing a voice and actually telling a lot of the individuals what really is happening, because I think that's where we're lacking, is knowledge and people being informed of the realities of what's going on in the border.
It is.
And they're not staying in the border. They're coming into America. You know, the drugs, the illegals, all kinds of things, and it's affecting everybody.
It is. It's an issue that needs to be addressed and addressed strongly. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me
on. All right. Have a good one.
You too.
We'll be right back. Don't you go away.
Last year, lottery players took home more than $924 million, but they weren't the only winners. Since the lottery launched in 2002, more than 1.4 million scholarships have been awarded to South Carolina students, and millions have gone to support K-12 and community education programs. So when you play the South Carolina Education Lottery, you're not just taking a chance, you're also giving one. For more information, visit sceducationlottery.com.
We are right here live from the Phoenix Park Hotel. My very special guest today, I can't believe I'm talking to her, Michelle Malkin. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you doing, Ann?
I'm very good. You know, I did a little research and I found out that you wanted to be a concert pianist.
I suppose I should amend that to say that my mom wanted me to be a concert pianist more than I did. So I did go to Oberlin Conservatory for one semester, dropped out after that, and the rest is history. I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now if I had been more talented.
So she's saying the lack of talent brought her to a conservative talk person, writer, journalist, blogger, all these different things.
Right. Well, you know, that I had a different skill set that I was blessed with. So
yes.
I've had an amazing career, and it's an incredible opportunity to be able to make a living running my mouth off and dashing off words. It's incredible.
You know, that's very interesting you brought that up, because one of the things that I love when you're on Fox or any of the places that I see you, you always put these great words together. I believe you said this morning, talking about the Senate, the sloth creatures.
You know, I just think we need more colorful language in our public discourse. And anytime I can use my English degree that I got from Oberlin, I will use it.
That's what I think is so great, yeah. So, you know, we're talking about immigration. We want to get your take on it. In our area, we see so many, it used to be the really low, low-level immigrants coming across. But in our area now, they're taking over the jobs of the plumbers, the carpenters, this type of thing. And then, of course, we have the high-tech people coming in with their H-1B-1 visas. What do you say to this? Because... And then we keep our own people on unemployment and disability and all these type of things. So there's no impetus for our people to go to work. What do you say?
Well, first of all, I'd say that this past election day was a referendum on so many of those open borders policies that have been propped up by both Democrats and, unfortunately, corporate special interests and the Republican Party elite.
Mm-hmm.
And Donald Trump's election was a rejection of the idea that Americans should be put last as opposed to first. He made it possible to say out loud things that people in Washington never want to say out loud. That yes, it should be a priority to, as the preamble of the Constitution put it, secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. First, yes, and to do so unapologetically. Now, this is something that I've said for as long as I've been in public life, and I suppose, you know, one could say that I had some sense of immunity because I am the child of legal immigrants myself, but it certainly hasn't stopped the nasty progressive left from calling me a racist or a nativist or a xenophobe. I mean, to have somebody as pale as Keith Olbermann calling me a racist. I mean, it's beyond farce. But to be able
you
to,
must like this. Yeah, I mean, you light up when you're talking about this.
Right.
I mean, if folks could see her, she's actually getting excited.
Well, it's amusing for one thing, but it's also telling. I think it's a great object lesson. And as long as I have been fighting identity politics, I've tried to make it very clear that for myself and for my family, look, it's the left that always loves to tell stories, right? That's
right.
A Alinskyite narrative telling. Well, my story is that my parents came here from the Philippines legally in 1970, and they always ingrained in us that it was a privilege, not some sort of entitlement. And I think that that sense is what Donald Trump has been able to restore, giving voice to families of victims of illegal alien crime, for example, and putting the priorities where they should be on the government and what they're sworn to do.
So, you know, I went back and I found this article that you'd written back in December of 2015.
Okay.
And it talks about Hamilton and the survival of the American public depends on the preservation of the national spirit and the national character. To admit foreigners indiscriminately to the rights of citizens the moment they put in for our country should be nothing less than to admit that the Grecian horse into the citadel of our liberty and sovereignty. That is awesome.
It is. You know, I wish we had more representatives in Washington, D.C. who took that warning and that message to heart. I couldn't put it any better than that. In essence, you have many infiltrators, not just within our shores, but outside, who use things like our lax immigration policies as a Trojan horse. That should have been the lesson.
Well, it should have been, yes.
Right, of September 11th, certainly, and we could talk about many other cases that preceded that. This is what prompted me to write Invasion in 2002, my very first book, which traced all of the paths and connected all of the dots that led to 9/11. Of course, in the immediate aftermath, you had all sorts of introspection from Washington, all the things that they were going to do to reform, to make sure it never happened again, you know, and it became
and
such,
look what's happening
right?
today.
Right! And it happens almost on a daily basis now with soft targets. This is not just a problem that's happening in Europe. And you've got a media that whitewashes all of these cases, particularly of these sudden jihad syndrome attacks, right?
Sudden jihad syndrome.
And
yeah.
I have to give the great scholar on Muslim jihad, Daniel Pipes, credit for coining that. You know, while we're talking about these phrases, known wolves, which is something that Patrick Poole, another scholar of jihad, has coined. We know these people are here. We know that they're a danger,
yeah.
And yet we open the floodgates to them.
We do. And the last line of this article, I just love it, is so great. Put simply, unrestricted open borders are unwise, unsafe, and un-American. A country that doesn't value its own citizens and sovereignty first won't endure as a country very long.
Yes, which is really just an echo, a resonance of what Ronald Reagan said all those years ago about a country that doesn't have borders isn't a country at all. And unfortunately, there are too many people in Washington who have not listened to that
So what's
warning.
The answer?
Well, you know, we've got the Trump administration, which has, I mean, it's like turning around the Titanic. I mean, there are so many aspects of immigration.
There was
policy.
An iceberg in the way there.
Right. So with regard to illegal immigration, there's got to be much more of a public clamor on getting that wall built. And it's not just the progressive left that we have to fight, but there are a lot of corporate special interests along the border that don't want to see it built because of the incentives of cheap labor. And we've got refugee resettlement rackets, which continue to be funded. And there's much more that the Trump administration could do to just shut off that valve. And then, you know, the subject of my last book was my co-author, John Miano, sold out.
We interviewed him last year.
And he is brilliant and incredible. He's an incredible patriot who suffered losing his job as a software programmer and decided he wasn't going to just sit on the sidelines. He became a lawyer who represents Americans who have been harmed by those programs. And he's had a tough battle in the courts getting standing for these workers. But we do
see, it just seems like it's that end and the other
yes.
end, and it's going towards the middle. I mean, eventually we all could be displaced.
Yes, That's exactly right. You know, I think it was Ted Cruz who once joked that we should have an H-1B program for journalists, and then maybe they'd finally realize the impact that these programs are having.
That's a good idea. Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Force them to train and replace, right? Train
yes.
their replacements, and maybe then we'll finally get coverage of it. But this is why we did a whole episode for a new show that I have on CRTV.com, Michelle Malkin Investigates, and we went out to San Francisco, liberal San Francisco, where the
yes.
tech workers at UCSF were sacked and replaced with foreign workers from an Indian outsourcer. And they're finally realizing that, gee, maybe all of this rhetoric about diversity isn't helping us at all. I mean, it could be because it was black, white, male, female, Asian, American
right.
Workers who were harmed by those policies. And now they're realizing, uh-oh, oops.
How do you like your TV show?
it's the best work I've done journalistically, I think, in my career, being able to delve deep into these investigative topics, travel across the country, and as much as I love yelling at liberals and about liberals for 3 minutes on cable TV, it is much more edifying to cover these stories that nobody else is covering in the way that only I can.
Well, you know what? I know Patricia's looking at me going, okay.
She's the timekeeper.
She is the timekeeper, and she's been very generous
yeah.
today. Michelle Malkin, thanks so much for coming on, and maybe you call into my show down there in Greenwood.
I would love to do that. Thank you, Anne.
All right. We'll be back. Don't you go away.
Lay away. We've done it for over 30 years here at Sharp Facets Gallery. So whether it's Christmas, a birthday, an anniversary, or just because, we know layaway every day. Come see us today at Sharp Facets Gallery. Need more info? Call us, 229-6613. That's 229-6613.
Again, with the intro up, time for me to start talking. How you doing, everybody? We just had an amazing interview, I think, with Michelle Malkin. And, of course, she was on Fox News this morning. She's everywhere. She's all over the show here. And it was really nice. And you know, at the end, we gave her a First Amendment T-shirt. And you know what she said, Emerald? She said, oh, and it's my size. She must get a lot of T-shirts that are too big. That's right. But anyway, she liked the T-shirt. And we also gave her a South Carolina pin, courtesy of the Festival of Flowers. These were the pins that were being done a few years ago. So we gave her a couple of things to have as takeaway from our interview, hoping that she will remember us. And when we've got other issues, maybe we can get her on the air with us. They said yes, so we'll see if she'll come on the air on WCRS right there in Greenwood. You know, FAIR is a big, big group, a group on immigration, and they are the ones that actually put on this show. They bring, I think they have about 60 radio broadcasters from across the country, in fact, all the way to Hawaii. There's one from Hawaii this year. So we really are pretty privileged to be part of this this group, and I am thrilled to be here and be able to talk to the people that we get to talk with. You know, one of the things that they really want to make sure is that our president, Donald Trump, actually make sure that he keeps his promises and, of course, build a wall on the southern border. We had the Border Patrol agent here, Ari, and talked to him about what it's like to be a border control agent, to be down there on the front lines working the border, how they're still coming across, how it's changed back. I mean, we had heard that it had dipped down when President Trump became president. But now he says, no, it's starting to go back up. So build the wall on the southern border. I'm looking forward to talking to somebody about these solar panels, though. Who am I going to talk to about solar panels on the border wall? And is that a bunch of hooky, or is that something that could be real? But that was one issue that the FAIR wanted to make sure that they kept up. And catch and release program, where they just capture them and then let them go. Enforce zero tolerance for criminal aliens. I think that is huge. You know, one of the they have several people here whose family members had been killed by aliens here. So that's something to be considered. Block funding for sanctuary cities. Lots of blowback on that. I don't know if you're following that, but lots of blowback. And whether it's legal, whether it's legal for the federal government to withhold funds if you are considered a sanctuary city. I was talking to somebody yesterday. I don't even remember. I can't remember who we were talking to about sanctuary cities and what is happening actually in South Carolina. Spartanburg, Greenville, they're kind of thinking that maybe, and he said that's something you need to watch in your state. So not something that one would think would be an issue, but something that is definitely could be happening in our state, even a state as red as South Carolina is. How would you feel to have cities where illegal immigrants could be safe, be sanctioned there, if you will? I don't think we want that. Cancel unconstitutional executive orders and enforce all immigration laws. As our last, before Michelle, Ari said, he said that enforcing the laws, what a concept. Seems to be one that we have forgotten. Just enforcing laws that are already on the books would make such a difference. Also, suspend the issuance of visas to any place adequate screening cannot occur. Ensure other countries take their people back when we order them deported. You know, what do? You send them back and they send them back because they're not willing to accept them. Finally, complete the biometric entry-exit visa tracking system. Turn off the jobs and benefit magnets and reduce overall immigration and make it merit-based. You know, I think Hamilton, the play, the musical, has been such a big hit. And Alexander Hamilton had a lot of issues about what our country should be about. And if you just go back and read those and the article that I was referring to with our interview with Michelle Malkin, the Grecian horse coming into our country, if we just let people in without having, and actually Ari, the Border Patrol agent, echoed this too, that we need people that are part of our country, not people coming in getting the bounty of our country and not appreciating the fact that they need to stand for what our country stands for. There's nothing wrong with that. And for too long, we have not taken that as a stand. So I think that with President Trump, we could see some more of, we could see people feeling this way. You know, one of the things that amazes me, you all have seen pictures of me up here in Washington, D.C. with my stars and stripes and hat and all this good stuff. Well, it amazes me in as many times as I have been to Washington, D.C., and I have not been since President Trump has become president, so this is our first trip here, but to see the number of people wearing red, white, and blue, being proud, the thousands and thousands of people at all the monuments, the Lincoln Monument, the Vietnam Wall, but people just here, and it just makes your heart feel good to know that people are starting to develop some pride again in our country. And whether you like or don't like President Donald Trump, he has brought some of that heartfeltness for our country. And I think that is so important in today's world. We need to remember why we are here. And yes, we are special. If we are Americans, we are special. Hey, I'm Ann Eller right here on WCRS. I am going to take a little break, so we'll be back in a few. Don't you go away.
Hi, this is Rob Gilchrist, voice of the Emerald Vikings, and I want to tell you about Romac Trophies and Signs. Romac Trophies and Signs maintains specialized service and offers their customers personalized and customized attention. Are you looking for a special way to reward your employees or team? Try a trophy, acrylic award, plaque, or medal. Romac Trophies and Signs adds your company or organization's logo and engrave your award to make it more personal. Visit their huge showroom in the Hampton Place Shopping Center and let Romac Trophies and Signs help you select the perfect gift for retirement or employee recognition. Are you coaching a team and want to recognize your players? Romac Trophies and Signs custom builds trophies on site to fit your budget and your individual needs. Romac is a proud sponsor of WCRS and sponsors the Player of the Week for Emerald Viking football. That's Romac Trophies and Signs at the Hampton Place Shopping Center in Greenwood. Call them today at 864-229-9277.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, live from the Phoenix Park Hotel. And standing across from me, who's not coming on the air with me right now, but is coming up this afternoon, is Dan Stein. He is the Fair President. You may have seen him many times on Fox News and some other shows, too. And he's going to be my guest this afternoon. He's going to get us all the info that we need to be able to understand what is happening. So really looking forward to talking to him this afternoon. You know, in a Radio Row situation, I've got a little curtained booth here, and then right next door to me is somebody that Dan Stein's going to be talking to in just a moment. On the other side, we talked to Michelle Malkin just a little bit ago. She's now doing an interview next door. Around the corner, there are all these senators and representatives. All these people are in this environment. And it's just a great opportunity. We also have the ranchers coming up, and we have some other people that we're going to talk to. You know, one of the people that wants to talk on the radio that I'm thinking about we may have is Dan Carter, being pro-English. What a concept, folks. How many times have you felt it's unfair that our government has a dialogue in Farsi? Do you think that is something we should be doing? Should we have it in English? Should you have to learn English? In the old days, didn't you have to learn English? I understand if a business wants to do things in Spanish or other languages, so be it. But as far as our country, isn't English our national language? I think it's an issue that really needs to be discussed. And nothing makes me more frustrated than to be on the phone and say, press 1 for English, press 2 for Spanish. Or maybe it's this way, press 1 for Spanish, press 2 for English, press 3 for, I don't know, some other language. But anyways, it is important that we maintain, I think, our English heritage and our English language. After all, that's what the Constitution is written in. Shouldn't people be able to read the Constitution? Should it be translated into another language so that people that are trying to become U.S. citizens? How about the fact that when you actually take exam for immigrant to become a citizen of the United States, they can have a Spanish person standing right there helping interpret what the intent of the question is. Should they not be able to speak English well enough? I think so. So we'll be talking to him. His name is Dan Carter. Pro-English is what he wants to talk about, and I'm kind of pro-English myself. So we'll talk to you a little later, Dan, okay? Okay, I got a guest coming up here in just a few minutes. But those are the type of people that are here. And that's what makes it so much fun, is to be able to get all these different perspectives. Our ranchers always give us a wealth of advice. I also want to tell you what I'm doing Friday morning. Friday morning, we have got a private tour to the Library of Congress to our Veterans Oral Histories Division. We are going to get this private tour from the person heading this program up at the Library of Congress. Her name is Colonel Karen Lloyd, and I am so excited to talk to a woman, Colonel, who flew, who did all these different things. She was kind of a glass ceiling breaker, shall we say, and looking forward to talking to her and hopefully bringing a lot of information back that we can use to start collecting more of the oral histories of our veterans. One of the Colonel Karen Lloyd's philosophies is that with today, with Skype and FaceTime and all these different ways to communicate, all those great letters that used to get written in the past aren't getting written. People write quick emails, but they don't spend the time writing out their complete thoughts and everything because they always have a telephone to be able to talk, or as I said, FaceTime or Skype. So a lot of these stories, she fears, are getting lost. And, you know, one of the things we always think about, oh, we got to hear about the horrific stories. Well, Karen says, and I agree, there are a lot of great stories out there that are not horrific. Yes, there are the horrific ones, but there are a lot of great stories, the stories of training, boot camp, learning all about how to, do the things, work as a team, and the things that you learn in the military are things that you carry forth in your life as far as teamwork and working together. So I think if we would get these stories down, our children and our children's children would be much richer for being able to go back and read so many of these things. So I am looking forward to that, and we'll be doing videos and Facebook and the whole nine yards, but to be able to be in the Library of Congress, as Colonel Lloyd says, before all the noise starts in the marble hallways and everything is quite an experience. And I can't believe that we are going to have that Friday morning at 8 o'clock in the morning. So that's what's happening there. Other things going on. Let's see, what did I do? I just picked up the Washington Post. Rescue on a deadly migrant route. Senate GOP halts health care vote, tries to regroup. Unafraid of Trump senators, feel free to go their own way. Gorsuch asserts himself early as a force on the right. That's the headlines just on the top half of the paper. As you can see, guess what? There's a lot going on, and they are covering it all. Hey, I'm Ann Eller. Right now, let's see, it's coming up on 9:30. My next guest is the one, the only, Michael Harrison. Why don't you keep it right here? Oh, my God, and he pops through the curtain. Unbelievable. I was giving you the wind-up before I went to a break, and then he pops right through. Hey, we'll be right back. Don't you go away.
They say every kiss begins with... But at Sharp Facets Gallery, every smooch begins with Sharp Facets Gallery. Which do you want? A little kiss or a big smooch? I'll bet a big smooch. So shop Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood, for rock bottom prices and smooch-able results.
Oh, that's right. On the road again. That's right. Michael Harrison is the editor of Talkers Magazine. He's an awesome guy. He's the radio guru. He is somebody that he has control over what number you are on the Talkers Heavy 100. I think they do it by weight. I'm not sure, and that's why I haven't made the top 100.
That's very funny.
Is that my problem, Michael?
We were thinking about having a panel of heavyweights on our in our convention, and just having people over 300 pounds on it. But it
didn't go over well.
It's not a great idea. It seems the only groups in our country today that you can offend are old people and heavy people, which is unfortunate.
Yes.
But no, and I don't have control over it. There is an editorial board, and let me tell you something. There's a lot of arguing and a lot of anxiety goes into that. We take it very seriously.
I know you do.
But it's also largely subjective, as are all beauty contests. It's not based on metrics. It's based on a combination of numbers and subjective criteria, because isn't that the way any kind of enterprise such as radio or television or movies or books, there's a certain amount of subjectivity to it.
I guess that is my problem, because as a small station in the South, I'm not rated.
But you know what? You know what? Here's my philosophy about that.
Yep.
Why would I be here to sit down and take a time out of a very, very exhaustive schedule to be on your show if I didn't think there was value and importance to it? And I believe that the way to approach that type of thing is to care about each individual listening.
Right.
The people that are listening, that's all that matters. I don't care about the people that are not listening. I don't care about whether it's one person. It sounds corny, but it's true. One person listening, 5 people, 100 people, doesn't matter. And one of the beautiful things about in community radio, a local station that you consider small,
right,
is that it's not, these are not small people listening. It's
no.
Not the buildings and the houses and the trees and the lives are not small.
Right.
The money there is not small. A dollar there is a dollar anywhere. Matter of fact, it might even be bigger there. So the point is
that making a difference doesn't necessarily mean how many people are following you on Facebook and what kind of a following you have on Twitter or what number you are in the Heavy 100 or what kind of ratings your show has. It comes down to person-to-person relationships. And from what I can see, you've developed a tremendous success track record in that regard, but you probably don't know it. You probably don't feel it.
Right.
And I'm telling you.
Well, because radio is actually, I mean, when I go out in the community, yes, and I open my mouth, even if somebody doesn't know me, they go, oh, that's Ann Eller.
Exactly. There's that troublemaker, that crazy woman.
Yes, but so many people do appreciate it. But when you're on the radio and you're just kind of talking,
it's that way even on the biggest shows and the biggest stations. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Sure.
At radio, there's no instant gratification to radio. You don't see your audience. You're not at a nightclub. If we were doing this program in front of a group of 25 people, we would have a whole different experience. People would be looking at us, and we would be on, and we would care about what we, you know, if my tie is straight and your makeup is right and all of that. But because it's radio, if it isn't a million people, it doesn't exist because you don't see them, you don't hear them, you don't see their faces. But what's the difference? There, you know, there've got to be more than 25 people listening right now.
Oh, absolutely.
And raise
your hands out there, please.
And the point of that is that's a group. That fills a room. That fills an auditorium, a stadium. What difference does it make? Interestingly, I find when I do public speaking, I'm more nervous, butterflies or whatever, the smaller the group. The larger the group, the less I feel connected to eyeballs that are looking at me. So I love this kind of radio. I think it's the foundation upon which the entire industry is built. And when I discovered you at this event 4 years ago, I felt that I had fallen upon a gem. And we have covered you and done stories about you and Talkers. And we do that because, aside from the fact that you're an incredibly nice person, and
Thank you, Michael, and
folks listening, she's definitely a gem. You're an important part of the industry, and she's looking at me like, you know. Of course, I have to realize you're a multimedia genius, and we're on TV at the same time that we're doing this. I learned that the hard way. oh my gosh, it was video recorded. I mean, you are a multimedia genius. I mean, you have taken the technology to its cutting edge limits. I mean, you're there, Facebook Live, all this stuff. It's great, but you do make a big difference. And believe it, enjoy it, because it's a very special way to make a living and to be in business and to have a relationship with the people around you.
It is. It's great. Do you know, on Friday, I am going to the Library of Congress. I've got a private tour with a colonel, a woman colonel, Karen Lloyd, who is going to give us a private tour. We're going to be talking to her about the Oral Histories Project for Veterans, and we're going to be taking that back to Greenwood.
Fantastic. That sounds very interesting.
It is, and I'm very excited about it.
And that's what's so beautiful about radio. You can bring a thing like that back to the people without, you know, too much rigmarole.
Right.
I mean, it's so portable, and you're great at that. So when are you doing that?
Friday morning.
How exciting.
It is. I can't believe. Actually heard it on the news and couldn't find her and went back, found the broadcast where they broadcasted her name, called her up, and made the connection.
Well, you have no problem reaching out to people, do you?
No, I don't.
You're very aggressive. And folks listening to this, that's good for you because Anne is out there hustling up a lot of interesting content on your behalf.
Thank you.
You know, so I think that's good. And I'll be able to watch and listen to that back in Massachusetts.
Absolutely.
You see, so what does a small station really mean in 2017? As far as I'm concerned, this is a portal to the world. I mean, isn't it true that anybody anywhere on the planet could be listening to us right now
Absolutely.
Or watching us?
Absolutely.
So what's the difference between a large and small platform? Maybe large or small performances. Do you realize what a difference you could make having this platform? It's all potential. The potential is there. When you get up in the morning, you could change the world. But that's hard to do.
the way our world is scheduled right is set up right now, pretty hard. Yes.
It's also hard to get attention. Yeah. The good news is anybody can hear you. The bad news is everybody's distracted.
That's true.
There's tremendous distraction right there in the world, and this is rewiring our nervous systems. I use that term a lot, and the more I use it, the more I realize how apt it is. None of us are thinking and existing the same way we did 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, and the changes are still happening at an accelerating rate.
Do you know, it's been 10 years since the iPhone. This week was 10 years that the iPhone and the changes that has made in our lives and how our kids and our grandkids will learn things has totally changed since that invention.
The smartphone,
right.
Without giving too much credit to Apple, although they deserve credit, the smartphone is probably the most consequential invention since the wheel or the refrigerator. The refrigerator is an amazing invention.
Oh, it's a good one.
What do you think about it? fire. I am amazed at the impact of this device. When you walk around Washington, D.C. or New York City or downtown Greenwood, if you count at 5 people, 10 people, the odds are 70%, 80% of them are walking around looking at their hand, engaged in that device. Now imagine coming back from 20 years ago, going into the future and saying, what are these people looking at? What are they doing? They're like mystics consulting their oracle.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Mystics consulting their oracle.
They don't have to know anything anymore.
Don't have to know anything. You know, my crystal ball tells me that there is something going on the other side of the planet right now. And how is my Aunt Tilly doing? And all of this is going on in your head. Now, I say 10, 15, 20 years from now, if you were to watch a movie of 2017 and people walking around with the iPhone in their hand, that'll look clunky, funky, and old-fashioned.
Well,
it's all going to be in our heads.
Yes.
It's going to be, there aren't going to be any devices.
We're
going to
be
like
the
device.
Borg.
I do believe that. I you know, you and I have a tendency to drift into Star Trek-isms.
Yes, I know.
But the Borg is, in fact, where we're heading. I just hope that we maintain our individuality against the backdrop of that hive noise.
Exactly. It's frightening, actually, isn't it?
Very much so. Very much so. That is probably the greatest challenge facing the human race going forward, is to maintain individuality with the onset of all of these voices in our heads, this collectivism that is happening. But that's the nature of Homo sapiens. We are both a social animal. We cannot live without each other. We are so intrinsically connected to each other that solitary confinement is worse than capital punishment in the prisons. You know,
right.
We're throwing you in the hole.
No!
We also have this impulse to be individuals and maintain our individuality, our selfhood. And that's a balancing act that manifests itself in political discussion, the individual versus the collective, you know, capitalism versus communism, socialism versus independence.
Right. So where are we headed with robots, artificial intelligence?
Oh, I think that robots will make life even easier for us.
Will they?
We have to be very careful that we don't sow the seeds of our own demise. But I do not believe, now we're getting theological and philosophical.
Right.
I believe that intelligence is not consciousness.
Intelligence.
My pocket computer in
right.
my iPhone is intelligent. The machine that we're talking through is intelligent. There's intelligence in it, but it's not conscious. It's not sentient. It's not having. It's not experiencing anything. I do not believe it is. There are some who say, "Oh, but it can happen that consciousness is an emergent property of any type of electronic complexity. That if you make a computer complex enough, intelligent enough, eventually it's going to say, 'I think, therefore I am.'" I don't believe that's the case. I think our consciousness comes from someplace else. So as long as we maintain our consciousness, we can control the intelligence of AI. But this is more philosophy than it is technology.
Well, I wanted to bring up, because I don't know if you've seen this, but down there at Georgia Tech, they have robots that are creating music, and they are giving them the first few seeds of it, and then they're creating music that they say is beyond anything that humans could ever do. In fact, it looks like a human, the person that the artificial intelligence that's creating this. It responds in a band, like with the headbutting and all this kind of stuff that they do. So who owns the music when a robot creates it?
The owner of the robot. The person who owns the robot, just like who owns the novel if you use a word processor or a computer to write it and you do research on Google, you do. The robot is still working for you. Now, music is going to change in this new era. I have recently become a songwriter. And I have been...
Oh, my God, this is breaking news right here on WCRS.
I started a year ago. I started writing songs and producing them with my thumbs on my smartphone. I am able to play every instrument in the orchestra. I don't know how to play guitar or piano, but I can do it now through computers. And I find now, with this little device, I can record songs that I make up in my mind. And I've come to the revelation that music is nothing more than mathematics with vibrations that go through the ear. It's math. So the scales and notes are math.
Right. Okay.
Mozart was a brilliant mathematician. It's math. It's a manifestation of mathematics.
Well, what about the feeling?
Well, the feeling is
in music.
The feeling is in the performance and the arrangement, and even feeling can be programmed when you say, okay, the feeling of, you know, what makes you get chills when you hear a certain song. That there's a scientific premise to that as well. But let's not get into too much of the feeling, because that comes to consciousness and experience.
Right.
But just the idea of composing a song is a mathematical process. Computers and artificial intelligence have a greater facility for dealing with math than our intelligence does.
Right.
And therefore, it makes sense that computers will be able to create songs that our brains are not nimble enough necessarily to do, or that a Mozart that comes along, or a Richard Rodgers that comes along once a generation to create beautiful melodies and amazing configurations of notes, the computer will be able to do it. It makes sense. It's amazing. It's a little bit, you know, alarming, but... it doesn't. It's not impossible.
So I need to ask you. You know, you've been doing a lot of musical podcasts with your Up Close and Personal.
Up Close and Far Out, not personal.
Yeah, well, it's personal on those shows.
Yeah,
let me tell you. Listen up, folks. But anyway.
Well, I wouldn't use a name like Up Close and Personal. It's kind of been used before. But believe it or not, no one has ever come up with the idea Up Close and Far Out. When I saw it was available and nobody did it, I couldn't believe it. Because every time I come up with a great idea and I go to Google it, somebody had it before me. It's crazy. But this one, Up Close and Far Out, there's nothing. It's just me. Great. I own it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's kind of like the other day I Googled I Have Stories.com, and it was available, and I grabbed it.
Great.
And I talked to Mike, and he goes, well, did you pay extra for it? And I said, no, I just Googled it, and it's mine. After I got off the phone with him, I'm like, you know, maybe I better check, make sure I really own it, and I do.
I Have Stories.
I Have Stories. Isn't that great?
That's wonderful, yeah.
Now
you'd better tell them.
Yes, but on your point here, you've done a lot of good interviews lately. If you want a good podcast to listen to, you should listen to Up Close and Far Out on Podcast One.
Right.
But you've done a lot of musical ones. Have you been pitching this music to some of these stars?
No. I do them because they fall into my lap.
Okay.
I do not pitch musical ones, but I have a tremendous musical background. I started in radio, music radio.
Yeah.
I was very, very, as active as I am in the talk radio scene, I was active at one time in the music radio scene.
Sure.
I don't know if you know that about me.
Yeah, I did. Yep.
And I have many connections that still go back to those days. And as a result, like Judy Collins, for example, fell into my lap, not literally, for a podcast talking about suicide. How could I turn that down?
Right.
So the podcast is not necessarily about talk show hosts. I'd say about 75% of my interviews are with talk show hosts because I like them. And talk radio is my base. When you're doing a podcast, we're talking a little shop here, you have to appeal to your base. Otherwise, you're just another person doing interviews out there.
Right.
A generalism doesn't work very well anymore. So I usually have it go through the filter of radio. But occasionally I'm, I don't know, I guess I'm just placating my own self-interest and to do it because I'd like to talk to Judy Collins or I'd like to talk to... I recently did one with Slim Jim Phantom, the drummer from the Stray Cats.
Yes.
That's a little bit of an exotic, you know, thing, but he's
a
cool,
cool
guy. Cool guy.
Cool,
And but I, my focus is people who are involved in communications and talk media.
Well, it's kind of get... It's kind of good to get far out, isn't it, and do some other things?
Yeah, yeah. Well, far out is a great. You know what's so great about it is it's such an old cliche. It's like, you know, far out, man.
Yeah.
And yet some of those old cliches were very cool, like far out, groovy. I mean, groovy is the ultimate analog cool term. It's in the grooves. We don't have grooves anymore.
No.
Now we have numbers. So I remember sitting with my. The editorial board at Talkers coming. What could be a modern word for groovy? And we came up with digi. And then we looked it up and somebody was using it. You know, digi for digital, groovy for, you know, it's in the digits.
Right.
You know, binary numbers, one or zero. You know, it's digi, man. You know? I mean, today, what are grooves? I mean, we take vinyl and we make these little grooves in it, and then somehow when a stylus runs across it and you electrify it, it turns into music.
Absolutely.
You know, now ones and zeros turn into music.
Hence the basis of math and your music that you're doing.
Right. How the heck do they do that, though? Think about it. You know, we live in a world, most of us have no idea how the technology operates.
No, we don't want to know, actually. We just want it to work when we want it to work.
We press a button, and all of a sudden we're doing miracles, and then we get used to it. We, the human brain gets used to things that we once would have considered miraculous. Now, oh, yeah, sure, I can drive a car. You know, I fly in a plane. I have a little device in my hand that is a magic crystal ball. If I showed up with this 50 years ago, people would think I was a sorcerer.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah. And look at where you're at today.
Right. I'm just a common garden variety sorcerer. I mean, that's
sorcerer. And he lives in Massachusetts, folks. Ooh. The Salem witches, yes.
Oh, is that? You're still holding that against me. I always wonder why Salem is so proud of its heritage of burning innocent people. That to me is just...
Bizarro.
It is bizarre when you think about it.
Yes.
You know, come to which city, you know...
Hang out for a while. Yeah. Well, we actually, down there in Greenwood, somebody just wrote a book about the ghosts of Uptown Greenwood. And this is actually verifiable. They have verifiable in these old buildings that have been reconverted into stores in Uptown Greenwood. And they have episodes where the ghosts have come in and moved items and done this type of thing in the store. They have recordings of it, and they just wrote a book. Emerald used to work in the museum in Uptown Greenwood, and she became very comfortable with the fact that there were other people in the place, and they weren't human, shall we say.
Wow.
Wow. So we have ghosts in Greenwood, South Carolina, folks.
Is there any way to sell tickets for this?
I don't know. That's probably coming. The book just came out.
Right.
Who knows? It could be a movie coming out, too.
Yeah. I mean, you know, people will come and make it a, you know, sort of like what they did in Roswell, New Mexico. You know, turn it into a tourist attraction. Come see the ghosts. Are the ghosts friendly or are they scary ghosts?
They're friendly ghosts.
They're friendly.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
well, it's possible. I mean, I don't know how I feel about that. The idea of ghosts scares me. That I don't. I want privacy. I don't want every dead...
Somebody looking over your shoulder.
I don't want every
every
dead person I know now knowing my secrets. Think about that, you know? It's like, get out of here. You know, the thought of that just unnerves me.
Well, maybe they have come back to life because of all the things we have with the Internet and everything.
It's possible that we're so...
Back
to that whole idea with the complex electronic system spawning some type of consciousness.
Yes.
I think if there's any truth to it whatsoever, it is the recording, the recording in nature of these spirits when they were alive that somehow still is vibrating, that it is a recreation of them. I'd hate to think that our fate is to roam the earth as bodiless conscious entities.
We never get to rest.
Yeah. Well, I do believe we're more than just what exists, but that's a
right.
whole different story. Maybe someday we'll do an hour on that. But maybe if you look at it again technologically, these are natural recordings of the vibrations of these people that are playing over and over and over. So thank goodness they are not subject to being stuck in these houses in Greenwood, where they have to live and eventually be tourist attractions.
Yes.
But, you know, because, you know, scientifically, the table that we're sitting at, the walls around us are recording these conversations back to the groovy thing. We just don't have instruments that are sensitive enough to read the history. But information is never lost. And everything is recording the vibrations, but it's on such a microscopic, subtle level that we can't begin to. But the history of the universe is recorded in the universe. And look at the face.
Now, look at, then that means we're just too busy out there. I mean, there is no space for anything. Will we run out of space?
No,
we'll never run out of space.
Well,
yes, don't think about it, though. We run out of gigabytes and we run out of cards and everything. If the universe, could we not run out of space?
Well, that's a profound question. You know, what is the bandwidth of the universe? And that is a philosophical question that lies at the core of the question, what is infinity? And we have a difficult time with our limited brains comprehending the concept of infinity. That's what it comes down to. So I'm not going to try to answer that other than to say that is the question.
Okay. You heard it right here on WCRS, the question.
Will the universe run out of bandwidth? Could you imagine? You open your mouth up. Sorry. We have no more room for your thought. Well, you know,
talkers wouldn't be able to talk anymore.
people who believe that we are living in a computer simulation, the simulation hypothesis that's called, do believe that we are living in some higher intelligence's version of a video game, and the way they go about trying to prove it is they're looking for glitches. Glitches, like, you know, like if I suddenly go, you know, and I haven't found any glitches, but I do find sometimes inconsistencies, and maybe those are glitches.
Yeah.
Like, how do you know that you're this on the same dimension right now that you were yesterday? You ever find, like, where did I put my keys? I don't remember putting it over there. Or how about the old mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all from Snow White? Do you remember
right,
that?
Yes.
Well, according to...
I ask that question every day.
But you're saying it wrong, because according to Disney, this is what I hear, I may be wrong, folks. According to Disney, that never happened. Mirror, mirror on the wall was never said. It was Magic Mirror on the Wall, but I remember it was Mirror, Mirror on the Wall. I had the record, that was the first movie I ever went to. Mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all? And it's Magic Mirror on the Wall. When did they change it? Well, maybe we've shifted to a groove right next to our dimension to another one, and in that world, that was the case, and we're all messed up about it.
Well, Emerald just said the machines didn't like that we were talking about them, and Michael, we have been off on a tangent this morning, but it sure has been fun to be talking about this shifted reality that we may be living in.
We might be, yeah, and I don't know, maybe the machine didn't like what we were saying. I mean, why did it said? Why were we pulled? It was Trump.
Trump.
It was Trump. He pulled us because we weren't talking about him.
Well, maybe so. But it sure has been fun to talk to Michael Harrison, the editor-publisher of Talkers Magazine, and so much more. Check out his podcast, Up Close and Far Out, on Podcast One. Michael Harrison, always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Anne. Feelings mutual.
All right. That's going to do it for us. We'll be back at 4 with Dan Stein this afternoon. Tune in. Bye-bye, everybody.